Hey everybody, welcome to the LeafsCast. I'm your host, Matt.
I'm Nate.
And I'm Drew.
Alright, hey everybody, welcome to the LeafsCast. We got a good one planned for you, or at least I think it's good. Nate thinks the topic is a dud. Okay, and I'm already thinking, but we'll see how it goes. We're going to predict the future tonight. We're going to talk about Linux in 30 years. And I'm sure we'll meander off and talk about Windows at some point. I want to talk, because we really can't talk about Linux without talking about Windows. At least I don't think so. So we got some stuff to talk about. But before we do, as usual, we're going to go around the horn and talk about what we've done this week in Linux. So, Drew, take us away, please.
I put out two videos this week, Matt. Two Nextcloud videos, to be exact. And in those videos, talked about how to improve the UI, as well as bookmarks and configurable share links, external storage tasks, and the Nextcloud deck. And I found out that fewer people than I even imagined care about this topic. If you're talking about viewership, then it was a dud. But I recognize that I am the niche of the niche of the niche with Debian, Xorg, and Nextcloud all combined, basically. So I may be the worst YouTuber with regard to monetization in the history of the world. So, and I'm fine with that because it's fun for me. So there you go.
There's something about those. So I published my Cirque's one last night, and that too flopped. I had a good time. I thought it was a good topic, and your Nextcloud videos were fantastic. So I don't, you're all fucking missing out. Go watch his videos.
You know what? It's the how-tos, Matt. It's the how-tos.
So a lot of times, though, Drew, sometimes those will, they won't do well, like right when you publish them, but over time, you know, as people, you know, look them up, you know, they'll find them, and the views will go up, but sometimes not. I'm convinced, though, that Cirque's one that I just published was killed by YouTube because I said stick it to Google on the thumbnail. So I'm pretty sure that it just got killed by the algorithm. I mean,
very likely.
I'm surprised I didn't get demonetized in the comments, turned off for terrorist comments or some shit like the last time I did an anti-Google video. All right, Nate, what about you? What you done this week?
So I'm actually getting ready to release my second video, and I've actually been doing some recording to catch up, because basically I went like a few weeks ahead. So that's kind of what I've been working on. And I have installed, I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's B-O-D-H-I, whatever Bodhi. Linux that you want to, So I've installed that on the W530. I think I'm going to stick with it from there because it has an older, I think it's 5.15 kernel. And my CUDA cores just work. So I want to keep it on there, let it do its thing, see how it tests. I will say the desktop environment is ugly as crap.
That's the one that uses like it has one called like Mocha or something like that. It's like a very old type. What's it based on? Man, his names. It's based on like
Mocha is what it's called.
Yeah, it's like a the one that Budgie was gonna move to use the library for. I don't remember what the names are, because I'm shit with names. I agree.
It was Enlightenment.
Enlightenment, that's the name.
Yeah.
Thank God I have two friends here better with names than I am. I'm really bad with names. But yeah, they have some themes for that, Nate, that aren't much better than what the default is. Have you played with
this? Yeah, no, I've already checked it out. it's horrible.
They were like really bad.
That's pretty much all I've been doing, and of course I've been doing something else, but that's going to be my nugget of the week, so I'm going to wait on that.
Now I guess that means it's my turn. What the hell have I done this week?
I put out a video on Cirque's. I did great.
I did actually make that video. Oh, I know what I've been doing. I have been messing around with my Bash RC files. So I really like a very small Bash RC file. I source everything that doesn't need to be there. So all my aliases are in their own file. All of the environment variables and stuff, I either pull out and put in .profile or I have in a sourced file. And then I also have the functions and stuff in their own file. So I have a very concise bash RC in it. But it had been getting a little bit cluttered because I tried out Zoxide. I started to use FZF a little bit. I tried out that thing that the Atuin or whatever that you were talking about, Drew. So a lot of that stuff had to be built into the shell. And so some of the stuff I wasn't using anymore. So I got, like, I got rid of Zoxide because it was causing some issues with some of my aliases. So I cleared up a lot of that stuff. I also, on some of my home lab VMs, I had put both Zoxide and Oh My Posh on there to make the prompts a little bit different, so I knew which machine that I was in. But Oh My Posh updates like once a week, and when there's an update, it prompts you for the update. And that kills your ability to SSH into the machine using the host name. And so I always had to remember what the IP address was, and I hated having to do that, so I killed Oh My Posh and all the servers, and I'll have to go and build my own prompts so that they look different instead of using something that was just making me lazy. So that's basically what I've been doing. Also, I did an update on all of my HomeLab VMs this week, and I will say this. Josh, if you're out there listening, you were right. And you know how much that hurts me to say. And just for everybody else out there, if you decide to do a home lab and you want a lot of storage, but you don't want to connect it internally, don't do what Matt did and use USB. It's just not a good idea. It's just not. I mean, I'm going to suffer through it, but especially if you're going to use like Proxmox, because Proxmox pass through of USB is very fucking flaky. So half the time when I do a reboot into that, my storage server, my storage VM, half the drives just don't connect. They're there, but they don't, for whatever reason, it doesn't follow the FS tab and follow and actually mount them. So I've written a script to, when that happens, just to check to see if it mounted, and if it didn't mount, mount it. And I don't know that I trust the script all that much, because I don't want to mount things in the wrong place or whatever. And plus, I wrote it, so I'm not convinced that it's a good script at all. So that's basically what I've been doing this week as well. So there you go. Now let's go ahead and move on to the main topic. So I will be 100% honest with you. I stole this comment or this topic from Linux After Dark. So credit goes to those guys. But I wanted to talk about this because last week we talked about the past, right? We talked about where we came from, what the distros we used. So what I thought we'd do this week, and I have some notes here, but also we'll do our regular winging it of it, talk about where we think Linux itself will be in 30 years, and assuming we're all still here and Florida's not, you know, ruined by a hurricane and Oklahoma hasn't been hit by all the twisters in the movies and Michigan isn't a glacier, we will maybe talk about where we think we'll be in 30 years when it comes to Linux. It would be very esoteric, because sure, I'm going to be on OpenSUSE, Nate's going to be using Pop OS, and Drew will still be using the 6.1 kernel in 30 years, I'm sure, because it's Debian. So there you go. And I've ruined.
Let's go with that. Because that would mean I'm actually alive. And I think that's a good thing. So cool.
Yeah. You're not that old, Drew. It's all right. All right. So first, let's go ahead and let's talk about, just in general, what you think the Linux landscape will be in 30-ish years. So Drew, why don't you kick us off?
So I don't know that there's going to be, I mean, we need to start making inroads into a lot of other areas, but as far as like servers, if we're talking about enterprise, we already dominate in that area. You know, in terms of, you know, servers and you know, enterprise systems and so on and so forth. I think that's, you know, that's awesome that we are so dominant in that area. And I hope that we even continue to grow. To me, it's going to be a question of technology. And can Linux as an open source project compete with all these closed source projects that are going to be, you know, coming into play in the next 30 years? Where will AI be in that timeline? Where will the desktop be? Because we've been waiting for the year of the Linux desktop forever. And so as far as that is concerned, you know, we've got a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about in terms of where Linux actually fits in the market in a number of different areas. Where will it be in mobile? Where will it be in AI? Where will it be on the desktop? Those are some of the things that I'm kind of curious if we can kind of get into with regard to, you know, the future. The future has so many different aspects to it, and technology changes constantly. So I don't know, you know, when it comes right down to it, there's so much that can happen in that time.
Yeah. So one thing you said there was that technology changes a lot, and that's true, but it never changes in the way we think it's going to change. So if you, I don't know if you guys ever seen some of those magazines and newspapers from like 100 years ago that were predicting the future, saying like, oh, we'd have flying cars, people would be living to 200 years old and all this stuff, right? They all predicted that technology would advance really, really fast, but none of them really were able to predict exactly how it did. And if you read science fiction novels, they sometimes do a little better job of predicting where the future is going to go, sometimes depending on the author. So like you read a lot of some of the older science fiction from like the 80s and maybe even a little bit earlier than that, some of the technology there actually did come in. Like if you, for example, Star Trek there, you can see some influence that it had on the technology that we have today. Obviously not all of it, but what I'm meaning to say is that when you talk about technology, predicting where technology is going to go, you're almost certainly, we're going to be wrong about it. So it will be interesting to see, because you're right that we do have to talk more about categories of where Linux is going to fit in and how other technology is going to impact it. Because AI is going to be an interesting one, because it feels like it's here to stay, which kind of also makes me sad. So, Nate, just in general, what do you think in terms of where Linux will be? And then we'll start getting to some of the specifics.
So I honestly believe that Linux will probably bump up to around the 10% mark in desktop, just because of, you know, what Valve is trying to do. Secondly, I do believe that ARM is coming 100%. And so ARM laptops running Linux will eventually come, which means that we might have, you know, the 8-hour battery life that we've been looking for how many years now? Because, yeah, Linux just goes full throttle on every laptop. But I'm interested in seeing not just what Linux could do in general, but also what is coming as far as like application wise, because it's one thing to have the hardware, but if there's more applications that's actually able to be, you know, become normal for Linux, then at that point, technically, there's no reason to ever rely on Windows. And I'm not sure if I actually see Windows even being a thing in 30 years, just from the way that they're doing things.
That's a real big question, don't you think? I mean, what are they going to screw up something so badly that the market completely reverses? You know, will that happen?
Well, I mean, and look how much they're actually, so instead of focusing on their OS, look how much stuff that they're actually pushing into Linux now versus actually Windows. And they keep trying to open up Windows sort of like Linux, but yet, you know, hold on to the money. So I guess we'll see how that goes. And I'm pretty sure we'll probably have an answer within 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, sooner rather than later, I would think.
Well, it's going to be, so the problem that Microsoft has when it comes to Linux is that it's really hard to monetize as a piece of software. But they've managed over the course of the last 10 years to transition over to something like Red Hat has been doing for years, whereas a lot of their stuff, they don't make the primary money on selling the bits. They make their money on subscriptions and services and stuff like that. So they already have the infrastructure in there for being able to monetize whatever direction they go in. The problem they face with Windows specifically is, how are you going to get someone, just random Joe Schmo who goes into Best Buy, to pay for a $10 a month subscription to Windows when they've never had to pay for it before? You know, it's a cost on the consumer's part that they've never experienced before, and they have no reason to want it, right? When you talk about subscriptions, right, like if you want to pay something, you always seek that out, right? You know, Netflix has something you want to watch, so you pay them money. You want a streaming service for music, so you go pay Spotify or whatever. It's something that you go seek out, or it's an absolute necessity, like a phone bill or, you know, whatever, right? So it's something that, you know, you have to have, and you get something very specific in return for it. For Microsoft to be able to transition over to what they want to do when it comes to Windows, it means having people pay for something that they've always not only gotten for free, but most people, the vast majority of people, have no interest in Windows whatsoever because they don't actually use it. They just open it. It's just a transition into Chrome, right? So
that's fair.
Their future in terms of how it impacts their transition over to Linux or whatever they end up doing very much depends on them being able to solve that problem, because Linux itself is also free. So if they can't, like, say that, like, tomorrow Microsoft decided that they were going to ditch Windows, the NT kernel is going away, they're going to come out with their own brand new Linux distro, but it's not free. You have to pay $5 a month for it, or $10 a month for it. Nobody's going to use that, because if they're going to switch to Linux, someone else is going to.
Well, in 30 years, Matt, I mean, I think that, you know, you have to, because to your point, Red Hat and IBM, the growing influence of corporations in the Linux ecosystem is concerning to me, honestly, because, you know, the future direction of Linux is right now in the hands of the open source community. And will that open source community still be in control in 30 years? I would hope so. I would hope so. But you have to admit, there is a growing influence of corporations in the Linux ecosystem.
And Microsoft would just add on to that, and so they could follow the lead of what's already been done and how it will continue. The question, like, to answer your question, like, will the community still play a role?
Not just a role, but actually
be in control.
Be in control. Yeah.
Well, the question is, are they in control now? I mean,
you can make a claim that Arch and Debian are in control of all of the distributed distributions beyond that point. You know, beyond Debian and Arch, both community-based projects. Yeah, I mean, everybody else is kind of like, okay. Ubuntu is taking on that role as a, you know, corporate influence distribution.
Let me push back on that just a little bit. How would Debian be if you took out Xorg, Systemd, Pipewire, Pulse Audio, Wayland? How would their distro actually exist without any of those technologies? Because every single one of those technologies, which every distro relies on, it was created by Red Hat, basically, right? It's very much in control of Red Hat.
At what point, though?
Before
or after corporate control?
Let's just say Debian decided that they were going to go full on Libre, right? Say in 10 years from now, corporate control has gotten so bad, and Red Hat continues to want to monetize literally everything. And Debian says, that's enough. How do you think Debian itself would transition over to a world where they had to go full Libre, in that, you know, they can't use anything that is touched by a corporation?
It would suck, to be honest, because then you'd go back to the ALSA days.
Well, I mean, because, so the kernel would be fairly easy because Libre kernels exist. The thing is, like, it would require a lot of work for the other projects. So, like, Xorg, they could just get rid of that completely and just fork Wayland.
I mean, you could fork every project that you just mentioned, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
and some of them have already been done. So, like, if Systemd, for whatever reason, got too bloated or whatever, too corporate influence, there are alternative init systems that are there and ready to go. In fact, they've considered moving to different init systems in the past. They've had votes on it and stuff, so it's the reason why I ask all that is just that it feels like when you talk about, I mean, we did a whole episode on corporate influence. They have their greedy little fingers everywhere. And also, on the flip side of the more positive way of looking at it, without their money to do those projects probably wouldn't exist. Or someone else would have to do it, or be way more fragmented. So Debian would have their own display server, their own, you know, init system, whatever, and then other distros would be on their own.
Yeah.
So in the future, I mean, adding Microsoft to that mix of things, I'm not sure, you know, how that would play out. Also, Microsoft isn't, because they're not an open source company, whereas like Red Hat is. Like Red Hat, yes, their first primary source, you know, primary goal is to make money because, you know, they're owned by IBM or whatever. But because they've always focused on IBM, their developers contribute massively to a whole bunch of open source projects. Whereas that's not traditionally been the case with Microsoft. Most of those guys have been working on proprietary software forever, and they're just now getting into having developers who are primarily open source developers, right? So I knew when I chose this topic that we'd almost immediately devolve into talking about Windows, because the future of Windows really does, I think, play a big role in where Linux goes, right?
Well, I would actually add to it as well, because I think we're leaving out Google. And the fact of the matter is, Chrome OS is technically based off of Linux. I mean, it's based off of Gentoo. So the fact of the matter is, where does Google fit in this picture as well? Because if they decide, because they're slowly going to a more open source kernel, to an actual Linux kernel. And so with that being the case, what does Google bring to the table? Because, you know, we could talk about Mac OS, but the fact of the matter is you have to buy the hardware. That costs an arm and a leg and a kidney, you know. It is what it is. And so not everybody's going to be able to buy that. So you're going to have all these machines that's got to run something. So the question is, if Microsoft goes the route of a paid subscription, and they can either buy Mac OS or they can use Linux and not pay for a subscription to use their operating system, where does the people go from there? That's the question.
You know, even more than that, Nate, I mean, we look kind of like in a micro scale, but if you're talking about the global, you know, if we're talking globally, Linux's low cost and flexibility right now is an ideal solution, providing resources to developing countries, and they can't afford that stuff. So I think we have, you know, and if that is the case, then hopefully like governments and nonprofits can, and countries that don't have like a already solid infrastructure can turn to Linux to deliver those kind of affordable resources and education and healthcare and government resources and even mobile devices. Who knows?
Okay, so why do I have to be the grumpy old man in the room?
Because that's your role.
Because mm-hmm. You use SUSE.
Okay, so first off, we have many examples in the past of governments choosing to use Linux and then almost immediately being bought out by Microsoft to use something different, right? That happens a lot. So whether or not that changes in the future, I don't know. I think that if, from a government perspective, switching over to Linux is a chore, simply because it does require a lot of effort and resources to do. It's not that Linux itself costs any money. It doesn't. What costs money is the support that you have to put in order to actually get it to work, the training that you have to do in order to get people to actually use it, along with transition. Because when you switch to Linux, you also have to figure out, you have to switch away from Microsoft Office. You have to get rid of Outlook and go to something different. You have to, if you're using, you know, if you're, you know, Adobe Shop, you have to figure out alternatives for that, you know. And if you're using like Excel or, you know, some random accounting software or whatever that doesn't work on Linux, you have to find alternatives for that stuff. And all that stuff always costs money. And that requirement of resources isn't something that is automatically attractive to people just because the software is open source. But from a non-government perspective, the problem is, and this is a problem that we've always had, and I'll be interested to see if you guys think it'll change. Linux is free, but the hardware usually is more expensive. So because it's so much rarer, if you go to like System 76 or Tuxedo or Slimbook or whatever, and you look at those prices, a lot of times they're quite a bit more expensive in terms of, you know, low-cost PCs than other, like buying a Windows PC and just putting Windows on it. So you can get a Windows PC for like $400. I challenge you to go find a Linux PC from a Linux vendor for that price. You just can't do it. They're all very, very expensive. Not Apple expensive, but in terms of like comparing it to a cheap Windows PC. So do you guys think in the future that hardware problem will solve itself? More vendors will offer Linux PCs? Because that's really the breaking point here, is that there isn't, because there's so few that offer Linux as a primary operating system, they can basically charge whatever they want, right? Because they know they're never going to be mainstream anyways, so they can basically, they're catering to us nerds, basically, and corporations. Do you guys think that the hardware situation will change at all in the next 3 decades?
I can jump in, yeah, but because I think that traditional Windows versus Linux desktop is going to be gone in 30 years. As we see it right now, traditional desktop might be, and we're going to shift to a more cloud computing where the OS doesn't matter as much. But that OS will be Linux-based. You know, that cloud-based OS will most likely be Linux-based. So I don't know that we're, and frankly, I haven't bought like a computer with Linux pre-installed ever. I buy like something super cheap and then ditch Windows and put my Linux on there. And maybe I'm the weirdo, but the fact of the matter is I don't know that hardware is that expensive comparatively if you can just like get something and put whatever you want on it. But to my point before, I don't know that the Linux versus Windows desktop battle is going to be sustainable in 30 years.
So you mentioned that it'll be a cloud. That's where you see Linux going, is completely like cloud native or whatever. There'll be no local bits. It'll just be streamed over the internet.
I think so. I would be curious to know what you guys think in terms of like, is there going to be desktop? You know, what will be necessary in order for the desktop user to have computing power? Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I kind of went three ways with this in my train of thought. Number one, I don't think, because the way that Microsoft is moving now, if you notice, they're slowly starting to put their applications on Linux. Even in the enterprise stage, most of the time you used to have to buy a Windows server. Now you can run a Linux server and use quite a few of their actual applications on Linux, and you don't have to worry about using a Windows server. That is coming. As a matter of fact, in my book that I just did for my certifications, they had a whole section covering Linux because they said, yeah, you're going to have to know this. So that within itself is a huge step ahead. Number two, I kind of agree with Drew. I don't think that the OS itself is going to be based off of cloud, but I do believe a lot of applications are moving straight to strictly cloud. So even though if you may have an OS that you can tweak or whatever, you're probably still going to have to log in and actually use a web browser or something to actually use your application. But here's a third section that keeps coming to me. We have a set of kids that are growing up now that don't even really use a computer. They use a phone and a tablet. So it kind of makes you wonder, okay, is it actually going to be completely cloud-based? Because a lot of these kids don't, the most they've used a computer was maybe a Chromebook that they did schoolwork on, you know? And so, and all that's internet, most of it anyways. So the question would be, would it actually be cloud-based, or would it just be the applications? Because technically Chrome OS, still technically Linux, is an actual operating system, but it's a lot cloud-based.
So I made a video a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, where I talked about how I'm transitioning over a lot of my previously native applications to the web clients. So things like Discord and Jitsi and the Mastodon client that I use and Proton Mail, all this stuff I now use in a web browser, whereas used to always prefer a native client. And I hate it. Like, it's the most useful because the applications themselves work better than their native clients in a lot of ways. Like the Discord client when I was using it was always breaking, and the web tab that never breaks, right? So because it's not reliant on the operating system. It just, it's just basically streaming it from a server somewhere, wherever, you know, wherever. So I say I hate it because I do feel like I still prefer. So when you described that future, Nate, of everything existing in the browser, that I threw my head back in horror because it just sounds horrible to me. And it doesn't sound like a future of computing that I would enjoy all that much. And I mean, I think we can talk about this a little bit because the primary goal, like you mentioned earlier, Nate, of Chrome OS was to be that portal to the web and all web applications. And it was also Steve Jobs' initial like plan for apps on the iPhone was all web applications, but it didn't work because it was too early. And Chrome OS was too early to do it because there's a lot of things that you just can't do in a browser yet. So they've had to bring in native support for Linux applications in order to expand their portfolio of what you can do with the operating system, right? But just because it was too early doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be the future. And that worries me from a nerd standpoint, right? The three of us are nerds. The three of us like to tinker with our things. You know, we talk about how, you know, we self-host stuff. And Drew just made a whole series on Nextcloud and all this stuff, right? In a future where everything is in the web, in the browser, it worries me that the future of nerddom is a little bleak, you know? And it makes me sad. If that's really the direction where we go, where does innovation then go? You know what
Well,
I mean?
I think also, you know, we talk about Linux runs all these web servers and the supercomputers and to a large degree, the Android and smartphones. But in the next 30 years, it could be even more ubiquitous in ways that are less visible. And that would include like embedded kernel into the cars and appliances and medical devices and things like that. The idea of the operating system may evolve to be more modular and invisible. But as far as as Linux is concerned, the foundational layer running across this hardware, virtually overall hardware, could be something that we're not doing currently. So that could be another like thing that Linux will be like taking over, is like hard, you know, actual hardware, you know, like cars and appliances and so on and so forth.
So there's actually a drum module that's already has Linux on it.
What module?
I'm a drummer.
Oh, drums.
And the Elise Strata Prime, their module is a multi-core module, and it's running Linux on the back end. And so if a drum company can do that, that gives me hope for future for actual audio and Linux being amazing, because that actual module was really good. And there's something else, I believe it's, oh, SpaceX uses Linux to run all their stuff. Even on what's it called? I can't even think of
the space station
or Starlink.
No, the Starlink. Thank you. Yeah, even that.
I'm the one that's bad with names. Linux. Okay, you can't have my thing.
Listen, we both have dyslexia. That's a bad operation on a podcast. But anyways, but yeah, like there's already numbers of things that's already starting to run Linux, and a lot of it already connects to the cloud. I kind of agree. It makes me sad, and I don't want that future, but how do you stop it when most people would consider it convenient?
Yeah, when you're talking about like I'm a software developer and all I have to do is go introduce one set of instructions or one alter the code in one place and it just populates everywhere else.
Okay. So what we're describing is actually our kind of already here. So if George Castor were here right now, he'd be shouting at us that his distro, which is not a distro, is cloud native. That's what things like Bazite and Bluefin and Aurora are, right? They're cloud native Linux containers, machines, distros, whatever you want to call it. And the idea behind those, from what I understand, and I've been talked to about this many times from George, is that the idea is that the operating system such as it is something that you just never touch. Like that thing is just there, and you're meant to have all of your interactions with any application inside of a container. Things like Flatpak or DistroBox or what have you, things like that. And while that's not quite moving all the way into using everything in a web browser, removing the influence of the operating system 100% is where I think that the quote unquote immutable distros or composable distros or cloud native distros or whatever you want to call them, where those things are trying to go, where you will use a distro, like Fedora, Atomic, or whatever, and you'll never touch the operating system itself. You just install your applications and you go. It does all the updating for you. It's exactly the same on everyone's PC, so when something new comes down, it just installs it. And if something does break, which would be fairly rare, it's going to break for everyone and will be immediately fixed, right? So the idea of that idea where the operating system becomes so removed from user interaction isn't out of the question, right? Because it's already something that a lot of people are already thinking about. But it is also something that's very removed from what Linux traditionally has been, because Linux has traditionally been for tinkers. It's very much a tinker's thing. And while it has moved into being able to be more mainstream with things like the Steam Deck and whatever, but even the Steam Deck uses something that is immutable or whatever you want to call it. So even they have said that we're using Arch Linux, but it's basically just a base for the Steam paint that we've covered over it. You should never really interact with the operating system itself, right? So the idea that Linux itself is, traditionally been for tinkers is something that I think will slowly change, but we nerds are very stubborn people, and when Linux changes or when something new is introduced that we don't like, a lot of times we hold on to the old with iron fists. So things like Xorg and, I don't think anybody's grabbing onto Pulse Audio and wanting to keep it, but, or people who don't like systemd, they take it and do something different, like run it or OpenRC or whatever. So there's going to be a pocket of Linux fools who aren't interested in that future that we're talking about, and that right there will will keep Linux bifurcated into the future and the past for what I think is going to be a very long time. So things like alternative init systems actually being able to have traditional Linux distros, those things will live on and will probably still be here in 30 years. The question will be how they manage to maintain themselves and how they, because eventually where the future goes with like the mainstream will divert so radically from what traditional Linux has always been that they'll kind of have to do their own thing.
And maybe that's going to be like attached with hardware, Matt, because when you're talking about traditional desktop PC and the fact that we Linux users are, let's just say, 3% of, we have a 3% market share for desktop right now. I don't know if it's a little bit more than that. Maybe, let's just say 3-5%, somewhere in there. Okay. Mainstream may be buying the computer with a cloud driven thin client already built into it, where Linux becomes the dominant OS for that cloud workstation or that virtual desktop. Instead of it being Windows, maybe that's what we're going to see. And maybe that's what Windows becomes, is that thin client computing that ends up connecting to a, cloud workstation or a virtual desktop.
Yeah. Do you think that when that, if that's the direction things go, do you think that there will be a, how do you think that transition will go? Because it's traditionally different than, what has always been. Do you think that there will be a lot of pushback, or people will just, it will be like a frog in water or whatever. Slowly people will just transition over to it and they maybe even won't even notice.
we're not normal. I think we have to all recognize that we are not the normal desktop user. Not even a little bit. Okay. People just want their shit to work. You know, they could care less about tinkering. They just want to, like to Nate's point, they just want to open the browser and they want to go to Amazon and buy something, or they just want to read the news, or they just want to know what the weather's going to be like. I think that we're not in the same boat as everybody else. We are not typical.
What I meant was the, so what do you think will come first, that thin client idea or moving over to the apps that will support? And when I say apps, I mean like web native, cloud native apps first. Do you think we'll get apps, the cloud native apps first? Yeah.
The apps are already here. Yeah. I mean, like the applications are already slowly moving towards straight web, regardless if we want it or not. I mean, even Adobe, as much as they talk about Photoshop, they have every year they release a new part of their web application for Adobe Photoshop. And so it's already coming. The problem I have is I am a tinkerer, but I also know for a fact that technically the way that we use Linux will still be around. Because think about this. Think about how many retro gamers there are. There are still systems running around that has Windows 95 and Windows 98. They still have, some of them even have Windows 3. Some even still run the Apple II. Like all that stuff is still available that they're using. Yeah. And so it will be around because there will still be us. You know, I'm going to be, you know, defiant until the end because that's just my nature. But irregardless, I still think that, to your point that she was talking about the immutable distro, one problem I have with immutable distros, you talked about how they could just push an update. Well, that's the same crap that Windows does, and I hate it. And so for me, I won't use a immutable distro because I don't want none of that stuff. I want to be able to say, hey, okay, update this, and that's it. So for me not to be able to touch my operating system is a problem. But I can also see where, as Drew was talking about, like, you know, you can get an ARM laptop, have an immutable distro on it. You know, it has great battery life. It'll run for a while, and you just mostly use cloud applications. And that's honestly where I see it going, because more likely there will probably be a tablet that runs some kind of Linux distro. I don't know if there will ever be a phone that has a Linux distro ever, but we can all hope.
Ubuntu Touch came out 2 days ago with a new OS.
Yeah, I seen that, but yeah, I still say it's just not ready.
I know. So, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But I mean, that's honestly where I see it. Unfortunately, I hate to say it because I am a tinkerer myself. I like to deal with my own applications and build it out and all that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I still see it going to cloud, because even if you have one of these, okay, use this thing all the time. How many applications that you use still sync back to the cloud?
That's fair.
Okay, so just to go back to the, I hate calling them immutables because that's not a word that they use anymore. The atomic distros, the cloud native distros.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I've been using Bluefin for months now. I use it on my editing piece rig. I had it on my laptop until we tried Nabarro there for a little while. And the thing is like, I thought, I was like you, Nate. I was like, I don't want my PC to control the updates. I want to do that thing. I really actually enjoy sitting down at my computer and running sudo zipper dup. Say what you will about zipper, it's slow as fuck. I know that, but I still enjoy having the control of going through and doing that every 4 days. I like to be able to sit here and watch it. I want to make sure that there's no errors. I want to make sure that there was no, you know, nothing deleted accidentally that I didn't want deleted because of, you know, auto remove on Debian or whatever. Like if you think that, like, if Debian had a atomic distro, having auto remove in the background would just scare the crap out of people, because, you know, auto remove doesn't always remove the things you want it to remove, right? So, but having said that, I've been using it for months, and it's been kind of refreshing to not have to ever, like, it's updated. It doesn't prompt me to reboot my computer. It just waits until the next time you want to do a reboot. When you reboot it, it does what needs to be done in the background, and you're done. It does all the application updates without you having to realize it. It doesn't kill, like, you guys remember, I don't know if Firefox still does this, but when you update Firefox and you're still using Firefox, Firefox will then tell you that you've done an update and you have to restart it in order to continue to use it. It doesn't do that on, I don't know about Firefox, but at least like Vivaldi doesn't do that, right? So Vivaldi got updated in the background. I didn't know it until the next time I came back to it after doing a restart and it says your browser's been updated. And that's cool. I mean, like, yeah, I do like the control. I do like doing my own updates, but there is something to be said about not having to touch any of that stuff ever, right? You just use your computer and do your work, play your games, do whatever you need to do on it, and you never have to worry about having, like, when was the last time you did an update? The problem becomes is when things become too automated, the things that can't be automated easily fall by the wayside. So things like backups, Bluefin's not doing my backups for me, and I've found myself very lackadaisical on that system about doing backups because it feels like everything's automated, but the backups really aren't. It's something that I'll talk about in my review. There's a false sense of security when it comes to those type of things because everything is done for you, and the things that aren't done for you just kind of flow out of the back of your mind. So it's just, I don't know that I agree with that direction, but having used it for months now, it does feel like that. If you wanted to put it on your mother's or your grandmother's computer and you didn't want to do any maintenance on that thing, that's the type of distro that's absolutely what you want to give them. Because you're never, like, if you just installed regular Ubuntu on someone who's tech illiterate, you have to be the one in charge of doing the update. So if you live like 100 miles away, every time you go there, you have to do the updates because, you know, they're never going to do it. With a cloud native or immutable or composable distro or whatever, that stuff's just done. And every time they reboot the computer, which is probably all the time, it just does the updates in the background. They never know it happens. And it's up to date with security wise and their applications get updated. They never touch it. It's the best way of doing a new user distro, I think. And it's sad to say because it also does take away that innovation and that tinkerer spirit that kind of has driven Linux to where it is right now, you know? So,
well, and that's where I feel like the Windows influence comes in, because that's technically what Windows does. It updates. The only difference would be is that when you update with your distro, it doesn't immediately tell you you have to restart in 30 minutes or we're going to kick you out of the game regardless. That's the main difference.
It does it way better than Windows does it. Because you, like, if you use Windows for long enough, you know this. When it does Windows update, things slow down. Like, the whole operating system will slow down. So you know it's doing an update. And also, immediately when it's done, it does. It prompts you to reboot, right? Because it has to reboot. Everything on Windows has to be off in order for it to run. It's just the way that the registry works, right? So it's going to force you to do it. On the Bluefin or whatever, it doesn't do that, right? It's completely the background. You don't know that it's happening until you turn it back on and you are all of a sudden on the next kernel. Like, it just happens. Like, you didn't even know it was going to happen. If you don't reboot your computer for 10 months or whatever, it's not going to tell you to do it. It's just going to wait until you finally reboot that computer, and then you'll get all the new stuff. And, well, like I said, I don't know that from a tinkerer's point of view that's a good thing. From a mainstream Linux point of view, I do think that that's the way that it should be. Not necessarily because users can't be trusted to update, but more because it allows for greater stability in terms of everyone's using the same, the same thing. Everything's exactly the same, and it just works really, really well.
That's why I think the thin client type thing is going to happen because of that type of that exact situation that you're looking for. It just, the update will not be handled by the actual user. It will be just handled. And we have to recognize too, that it's like, you know, we have our, you know, and this again is, we're not talking about today. We're talking about 30 years from now. You know, we have applications that we love, these kind of monolithic applications. But I mean, you really love your Docker containers, you know, your virtual like software basically. And that is going to be the wave of the future basically. You know, you're talking about Docker, containerization is what I'm looking for. Containerization It's not going to be on your machine. These are not applications that reside on your machine. They are somewhere else, and you're using them.
Yeah. And Arch Penguin in the chat says that you can do plenty of tinkering with OS tree-based distros. That's true. You can still do a lot of tinkering with the current Atomic distros. They're basically Linux with automated updates, from what I can tell, and that's just fine. So it's not as dramatic, but we're talking about in the future where more, you know, it's much more, I'm not going to say locked down, it's just nobody cares about the abilities. You'll probably always be able to tinker with something because it's going to be open source. So even if it's the thin client that Drew's talking about, you're still going to be able to go in and do stuff with it because it's open source or whatever. It's just the things that you can do it will be changed because it's not going to be as broad or, you know, as monolithic as the current kernel is, right? So before we jump in...
The kernel will evolve as well, because we're talking about, you know, we didn't really get into AI too much, and that's
I was going to go next if that's what you wanted to do.
Okay, go ahead.
Just going into AI, where do you guys think then that AI plays a role? Because Microsoft is obviously all in on AI, right? That's the thing that they're doing. They've invested like $50 billion in OpenAI, which is behind ChatGPT. They're doing this stupid thing where they only have one word for AI, but they have multiple different things. So everything's Copilot, but they're not all the same Copilot. But they built it into everything, so much so that now I have a brand new Linux or brand new Windows laptop. Didn't keep Windows on it, and I put Linux on it, but it has a Copilot key on the keyboard.
Like
it,
really?
Yeah, it has a brand new key, and it's just there. I have no idea what it does. But
presumptuous.
Yeah, it's just there. So AI is the thing that Windows is for sure doing, right? It's built in, absolutely happening, in fact, already happening. And, you know, Apple's doing it, Google's doing it. Where do you guys think that AI is going to get its hooks into Linux? Because it probably will happen. Who wants to go first? Drew?
Well, you know, over the next 3 decades... I think Linux will end up becoming the primary operating system for AI. And if it's not already, you know, basically. And you're talking about specialized distributions, and they'll be tailored for large scale machines and quantum computing. And the kernel, our kernel, will be optimized for that massive workload. And, you know, new drivers are going to be like, developed for, you know, for that particular, you know, AI and quantum computing. And it's coming. I mean, it will arrive in the next 30 years. So is it good? No, it sucks. We've talked about this ad nauseum about privacy, you know, but at the same time, I don't know how, again, we were talking about avoiding certain things by being a tinkerer and having your own privacy-based operating system, but you know, AI is, what are you going to do? I don't know what.
So if you look at the AI that exists currently in open source form, a lot of like the language models and stuff are like things that you don't. So there's this thing called Whisper. It's like a voice transcription thing, right? And none of that's online. You download those, the language models, to your computer, and then it does all the work with your hardware comparing against that data set, right? And I don't know how they get the data itself. That's probably the privacy disrespecting part of it. Like they get that data from somewhere. But from a computational standpoint, I think that local computation for this AI stuff is going to be where Linux differentiates itself. But I want to be a curmudgeon for a little while and just hope and pray that AI just dies. And I think that there's a good chance that in a few years, AI will not be here. Or at least that's not what they'll call it. Mainly because it feels like a lot of the hype around it has transitioned it from it being, wow, that's really cool, to, that's kind of a gimmick. And I think in a lot of ways that is the, you know, remember, perception is 90% of the way people react to things. And from a mass humanity perspective, AI has not proven to be the game changer, I think, at least so far, that it was hoped to be. But there's such a gigantic commercial push for it to succeed that something is going to be AI. Whether it's actually AI, I don't know. And from a Linux perspective, I think this takes us back to our corporate talk earlier. The corporation influence in Linux is where AI is going to finally come into Linux. Because the corporations want AI to happen, and I think that somewhere along the line, they'll work that into their plans for Linux. The question I have isn't how that affects the computational or the server or the enterprise. How does it affect me as a desktop Linux user? Like, am I going to have if I launch into the next version of GNOME, is there going to be a GNOME AI, button in the dock or something like that that I have to deal with? I mean, is that the direction we're going to go, or is it going to be much more subtle in that it just kind of pops up in individual applications? So if you download GIMP 3.50 or whatever in 25 years, are you going to see AI worked into that? I'm just kidding. GNOME 3 is not going to be out in 50 years. Oh, Matt, that's just rude. But you guys get the point. Like, how do you guys think the AI will work itself into the desktop itself? It'd probably come to that enterprise and stuff like that. But do you think that I know we're going to move into thin clients and stuff like that, but still, people are going to have something to use. Do you think it's just going to be all browser-based, so everything will be on the browser? Or will we have integrations with other things? How do you think that that's going to play out?
Well, so I personally think that Linux is going to still be Linux at the end of the day, which means that I do think AI is coming, and it's going to be integrated into the actual operating system. But I still think it will probably wind up being in the use case that you can just click it off if you wanted to. Just for the simple fact, look at what Canonical did with the Amazon thing. Everybody made a big deal about it, but the fact of the matter is, you literally could just click a button and it turned it off. You know, even now, if you want to send a report to, say, hey, if my system crashes, send a report to, Manjaro or whatever, or PopOS or whatever, you can do that, or you can just click a button and say, no, I don't want to do that. I still think Linux will be that in the future. I don't see that going away. What I do see it happening is applications slowly implement it into their system. And so, for example, it's already there in VS Code. I was typing on VS Code a while ago, and it was automatically trying to tell me, oh, you can say it this way or this way. And I'm like, go away. I don't need you right now. But I do think that's what's going to happen, is it's going to go into those applications. And I'm not so sure if a thin client will actually be the full answer that it's going, but I do believe small mini ARM PCs would actually be probably the use case that it goes to. Just for the simple fact, they can solder the RAM, they can solder the chipset, they can solder the storage and basically kind of lock you into something and sell you a piece, and then say, oh, if you want to upgrade, your stores, then, well, you can be like Apple and pay another $200 just for 512 gigabytes. But anyways, but that is where I see it going. And I do see the AI itself just slowly been integrated into applications itself. But I still think Linux is going to be Linux.
Yeah, I think I'm
with I was you. Thinking more in.
Go ahead, Nick Drew.
I was just say, I was thinking more in terms of enterprise, because as far as AI is concerned, we all recognize that COBOL is still a viable way to program in banking software, which is crazy because there's so many different, there's so much better languages out there that are much more powerful than COBOL. But there's the guys that are my age still programming COBOL. But once AI sinks its hooks into enterprise for specific tasks, it's here to stay. I mean, COBOL's still here. So, and I'll give you a real world example. One of my best friends is heading up a initiative at a large company where he has been tasked to basically take their HR systems into the 21st century and beyond. And you, I mean, once they do all the data analytics, AI is definitely going to be a part of the solution process, which will be implemented over the next 5 years, which will carry them into the next, you know, 25. So, you know, that was really my point in terms of AI and quantum computing. It's much more on going to be on the more prevalent on the enterprise side. I don't know that it will be, you know, like we know we're desktop users, but we are going to be affected by enterprise solutions. No question about it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Nate is right in that from a desktop user perspective, applications is where we'll find that AI plays a role. So we'll have, you know, a lot of stuff will be in the browser. So every browser that we'll use will have some kind of AI integration. I mean, a lot of them already do. I know Firefox is working on something. I know Brave has Leo. Surprisingly, Vivaldi doesn't have anything with AI yet, which I'm very thankful for. But I'm sure it will come. Chrome has Gemini integration all over the damn place. You cannot get away from it. You use Microsoft Edge, you're going to see Copilot all over the place. So a lot of the AI user-facing features are going to happen in the browser, but also individual applications, like things like, I'm sure, like Inkscape, and I made fun of GIMP earlier, but I mean, eventually maybe some AI tools come to those if they, you know, get their act together. So things like that, I think that from a user perspective, it will be the applications that have the AI come to them. Let's say from 10, 15 years ago, distros are still a thing. I don't think that a lot of distros themselves will have AI tools. I think they may have include applications that are AI tools, but I don't think like you're going to open up Fedora and all of a sudden, you know, Cortana Jr. is going to pop up and say, hey, would you like me to enable RPM Fusion for you? You know, maybe they need that. I don't know. So it's interesting. So Drew, on your list of research, was there anything that we didn't hit that you wanted to?
Not that I want to. Let's put it that way. I mean, we could talk about privacy if you really want to, you know, with regard to how Linux will be still as private, I mean, as it has been in the past. But, you know, we also talked about how the corporate side of it could affect that.
Okay. Let's go ahead and skip the privacy stuff for now, and we'll go ahead and move on to the nuggies of the week. All right.
Can I make one comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
So one comment, well, I'm going to make two. For one, AI will be there because NVIDIA's already released their massive rack with NVLink. That's running Linux, by the way, but it's one massive ties of GPUs together. And somebody mentioned that AI doesn't need benefits or time off. But the fact of the matter is, AI, regardless of what we do, there's going to have to be a human that fixes it. All it's going to do is create new jobs that we've never had before, just like computers has. They always said back in the 70s, oh, computers going to replace everything. And yet here we are today still having to hire more technicians because people's got to fix it. So there's always going to be jobs. There's always going to be Linux is kind of basically what I was going to say.
I agree. Okay, let's go ahead then and move on to the nuggies of the week. So this is the last part of the podcast that we do every week. And we've called it something that I vehemently disagree with because I hate the name. But it is what it is. So these are our picks, our tricks, our apps, or whatever you want to call them, and basically things that we'd like to share with you guys that we just have found over the course of using Linux or whatever. So, Drew, your nuggie of the week, please.
So I have done, like I said at the top of the podcast, did two videos on Nextcloud. So it makes sense that I actually talk about a Nextcloud application. And it's a Nextcloud Deck, and it's a project management tool that is part of Nextcloud suite of collaboration tools. It is a board layout where you incorporate cards, and it can be like a, you know, file integration, and it can be part of your calendar integration, and you can assign projects if you are in a group setting. And you want to assign or organize tasks and track progress and collaborate with team members. And even if you're just by yourself and you want to track specific ideas, Nextcloud Deck is an excellent tool for managing that.
Cool. Nate, your thingy or your nugget of the week.
So once again, here we go. PopOS 2404. In particular, what I want to talk about is actually the Cosmic desktop, because I have been testing it recently. And in particular, I have been testing it on this, I call it my crapway, because it's literally a Celeron dual core Intel piece of junk.
Is Gateway even still in business?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because this, really? This used to run Windows. Yeah, this ran Windows 11, which I completely wiped. Okay. So, but that's I shocking. Actually started testing Cosmic on it because I just wanted to see how it works. To my surprise, Cosmic ran extremely well. And so, you know, just like XFCE, if you want something that is Wayland, that runs extremely well on a piece of junk of a hardware, I would honestly say give Cosmic a try, because I was totally surprised. I've not had it fail once. It hasn't crashed. And even though it's still technically in pre-alpha, it's been super stable. So that is my nugget of the week, just because I've been testing it.
I am astonished that Gateway is still in business, to be honest with you. I'm sure it's owned by someone else now, but my very first personal computer was a Gateway. We bought, like, they used to have those stores, right? You go into a store, and then like 2 or 3 weeks later, they'd deliver you your computer. It would come in about 40 boxes. And I remember this. I had just entered high school, and it cost probably $5,000 at that point. And it came in a huge number of boxes. It had enough literature on it to staff a library. Like back in the day, you actually got books on how your computer worked. I don't, you kids these days, you don't know how to use your computer because they don't have books anymore, and you don't even know what a book is. But anyways, it's astonishing that company's still around. It just absolutely blows my mind. All right, so my nugget of the week is an app called Flipboard, and this thing has also been around for a very long time, but it's a mobile application for news, and it's all curated by its users through social media. And one of the reasons why I like it so much is because they've basically completely gotten rid of X, and X is in Twitter, right? They've completely gotten off from Twitter. They're using Federation and Mastodon and ActivityPub for all their stuff now, and I like that stance. Whether you like agree with the politics of X or whatever, I don't care. But I really do like the federated nature that social media, at least some social media, has taken on. And Flipboard has managed to make a news or transition their news application from what it was to using ActivityPub and the Fediverse in a way that really, really works well. And was basically seamless. Like, it's still really, really good, and it's available on basically any mobile platform that you want to get it on. I wish I had a Linux application, but it doesn't. But there you go. Flipboard is mine. So that is it for the Linux Cast. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so. The easiest way to do so is via email. Email at thelinuxcast.org is the contact information there. You can find Drew, who makes Nextcloud videos now. You should go watch those things because they're really, really good. He's Just a Guy Linux on YouTube, youtube.com/justaguylinux. And if you don't care for the Nextcloud stuff, first off, shame on you. But you can also...
I'm still doing it. I don't even care, man.
You just go over there and watch some of his Debian and ButterFS stuff. It's pure crack. Like, it's nerd porn is what it is. It's awesome. That went creepy really fast. Anyways, youtube.com/justaguylinux. It has been a long fucking day, so I have no clue what I'm saying. Just get off my back. Nate also has a YouTube channel. I have no clue what the name is. I remembered it. It's Nate Picks Tech World.
There you go.
You need to come up with a better name. Just something that I can actually remember. I beg of you, please.
Just say Nate and then look in the description.
Yeah, anyways, in the description, you'll find links to both of those guys' YouTube channel. You can also subscribe to this YouTube channel, youtube.com/LinuxCast. If you want to find any of our other contact information, the best place to do that is on the website, which is thelinuxcast.org. You can find all of the contact information at thelinuxcast.org/contact. There you'll find the the Discord servers and email addresses and all of our links to Mastodon and all the places you can find all of us. So head on over there, check it out. You can also support the podcast, patreon.com/linuxcast. I release a weekly exclusive podcast over there for all my patrons, also on YouTube as a member exclusive as well. So there you go. If you want to watch us live, we do in fact record this live every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I'm never late, and anybody who says so, completely lying to you. 8 o'clock p.m. on the dot, sharp, just like a train. We never miss it. So there you go. You can catch us live. If you can't catch us live, you can find the podcast on every single podcatcher that you could possibly imagine. I've put in a lot of work to making sure that the podcast is available anywhere you want it. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those things. You can catch the edited version, which is basically just this, but without the ums and the pre-show. That is spectacularly edited by Mr. Nate there, so definitely check that out. That's released every Saturday evening, I think. Right? Saturdays? I don't know. Yeah. So yeah. There you go. I don't even know what day it is anymore. Anyways, that's it for this one. Check us out next week where we'll be talking about who God knows what. I'm sure I'll come up with a good topic. I'm sure I will. Anyways, I have to have a proctor or so someone who comes up with ideas for me because I'm out of ideas. Anyways, there you go. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.